Markets Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin school districts are exploring all-electric school buildings. Data from the New Buildings Institute shows Dane County is home to the state's first net-zero school.
In 2020, Forest Edge Elementary in Fitchburg opened with more than 1,700 solar panels, dozens of geothermal wells.
Now, the Menasha Joint School District is building its first all-electric middle school in Winnebago County through a $100 million referendum.
As schools apply for federal tax credits under the Inflation Reduction Act, we explore costs, efficiency, and sustainability.
With Andy Weiland, business manager of the Oregon School District. Andy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thank you.
And Teresa Lehman is director of sustainable services with Myron Construction, that's based in Neenah. Teresa, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Andy, let's begin with you. As the school year is just weeks away for so many kids, Forest Edge Elementary students and teachers once again going back to a school as an all-electric building. Can you help us understand what all-electric means?
You bet. So essentially what's happening there is that natural gas, which is so prevalent in our communities because of, for heating needs, is actually only at the street in the neighborhood. It does not come to the building. So everything in the building works off of electricity. And we produce more than the amount that we use in a year, which is what makes it a net zero building.
And because this building has been in place now for some years, do you find that it continues to hold up? I mean, there is wear and tear with students.
Yeah, absolutely. The building is continuing to perform really, really well. The mild winter that we had this last year actually helped us achieve what we kind of call net zero, which means we've produced more energy than we've used. We actually achieved that a month early this year, which is kind of a little bit of a surprise. But we've actually made more energy than we've used for the entire year already. And August is always a month for us that we make more energy. So we've already secured that for this would be, I think, our fourth year running.
And how much energy are you able to return to the grid?
So right now, we've already exceeded how much we plan to use for the next month. We start kind of on a school year basis when we look at this. So I don't know that it would mean a ton to your folks, but probably this year, close to 60 megawatts of power will be going back to the grid that won't be used in the building.
Teresa, turning to you, you're leading the Menasha Joint School District through its first all-electric middle school. How similar is this system to Forest Edge Elementary?
It's pretty similar. For Menasha, what they have done is they've chose to utilize a geothermal heating and cooling system, and they actually have their hot water system tied to the geothermal system, as well as their walk-in coolers and freezers. So it, too, like Forest Edge, will be an all-electric school. The only gas that goes to that school is in the gas generator, which is just strictly for backup purposes only. And then they have a 1.3 megawatt photovoltaic system on the roof, which will go to offset all of the electricity that the school consumes, both for heating as well as lights and plug loads. So similar in the fact that it's going to be zero net energy, like Forest Edge.
Andy, in terms of Forest Edge with, you know, over 1,700 solar panels, and you have dozens of geothermal wells. What can you tell us about what that is capable of doing?
So, like we've talked about it, you know, we don't have to burn any carbon-intensive fuels at all. Everything is generated from the building, from the photovoltaic cells. The geothermal wells, just as your other guest mentioned, that's how we heat and cool the building as well, is super, super efficient. So our building actually runs at a half the amount of cost of our other buildings on a per square footage basis. And last year, just because of some anomalies in the energy market, it actually ran at basically a third of the cost on a per square basis for our building. So we save a lot of money that we can then basically put into the educational program for our students, rather than sending it to the utility, as well as you know, doing what's right for the planet Earth and the future of our students.
That's really remarkable, because that can certainly take some relief out of your operating costs, as so many districts are really struggling to make their budgets work.
Absolutely. That is a struggle for all of us these days. And we appreciate being able to put that money back into things that, you know, the students appreciate, other than just being comfortable in school. But the building performs really, really well. So, you know, they're not giving up anything in that regard either. It's always at a really good temperature. Humidity is controlled. We got lots of fresh air coming in. So so far the building's performed really, really well for us.
Teresa, geothermal has had some issues in much colder climates, like here in the Midwest. Do you find that the technology is changing, or is that not as much of an issue any longer?
It's actually not an issue. Myron has built over 90 projects with geothermal heating and cooling systems, including our own corporate office located in Nina. And we frankly just don't have the issues, I think, that some maybe have had. I know horizontal geothermal systems used to have some issues, right? Those are the where the vertical pipe, or the normally in a traditional geothermal system like Menasha as well as Forest Edge, we have vertical wells. And so those vertical wells go about 400 feet down into the earth. And by well, I mean, it's a hole that's drilled into the ground. And then you have almost like PEX piping that goes down into the well, and then it comes back up. So we're just really using the earth as a way to transfer the heat, which the earth from 6 feet and below in this area is about 55 degrees. So as that glycol water mixture is traveling through that PEX piping, going down the well and up the well and down the well, you have so many wells drilled that are based on the thermal conductivity of the soil as well as the square footage of the building. So then as that water glycol mixture is traveling through the PEX piping, you're able to garner the 55 degree temperature of the earth. So in the winter time, really instead of like 0 degrees or minus 10 degrees coming into the building from an air standpoint and having to heat and cool that air, you're really utilizing that 55 degrees from the earth's temperature.
And Teresa, thank you for walking us through that engineering aspect of geothermal. I'm wondering, though, with so many hydrothermal wells, does that create any structural issues?
There's a lot of permitting for this. So you work with the DNR quite frequently when you're trying to lay out your geothermal systems and just make sure that everything is environmentally sound.
Teresa Lehman is with us, Director of Sustainable Services with Myron Construction. Andy Weiland is Business Manager of the Oregon School District, as we talk about the cost and efficiencies of electric schools in Wisconsin. Andy, both Oregon and Menasha now held referendums to fund their building projects. Is having that community support essential to building an electric school?
I would say absolutely. You know, in our case, our community kind of rallied around our Board of Education, who then took the leadership role to kind of tell us and actually created a policy which asked us, from an operational perspective and an educational perspective, to kind of take the lead on sustainable initiatives. And Forest Edge is kind of our, in the end, our capstone project, I guess, if you would. We did some projects before that and learned these technologies before we did the Forest Edge project. But basically, you were talking a little bit before about some concerns. And these two technologies have been around for quite a long time. What I understand they're doing in Menasha and what we did in Oregon is just marrying photovoltaic solar panels with a geothermal to stay so that you're not burning any fuels at all. So it's been a great pairing of those two strategies to make it all work.
has the district got students involved here, or how might the curriculum intersect with the building design, you know, that's being demonstrated in the buildings that they're learning in?
Absolutely. We took a lot of care working with our architect, Bray Architects, and HGA. We kind of combined the two of those folks to come up with Forest Edge, to use instructional spaces as kind of learning tools for what's happening in the building. So showing how far geothermal wells are, how similar to Manasha, our wells are about 400 feet deep. And how does that relate to an elementary student? So in our instance, one of our graphics, we took the Capitol building, which our students are fairly familiar with being just south of Madison, and tipped it upside down and showed that our geothermal wells are actually taller, if you would, than the Capitol building by quite a bit. Since I think the Capitol building is like 280 some feet, we go 400 feet. So just showing the relationship of those types of things. But then also talking about the science of it and how, you know, photovoltaic systems work and how it's very similar to how nature uses plant growth and those types of things, leaves to harvest the energy from the sun. So we, throughout the building, have different graphics that try to explain that to our students. And then we also try to take situations where we get kids active, and we have a bike which the students can pedal that shows how much energy, how many watts they're creating by pedaling the bike, so that they can kind of get an understanding of the amount of effort and energy that it takes to create a watt of energy, and then trying to also show them how many watts or kilowatts of energy we use in the building throughout the entire day.
Teresa, I bet you appreciate these types of demonstrations.
I certainly do. As a construction company, it seems a little odd, but Myron is actually quite active in helping with environmental curriculum. So in the state of Wisconsin, every school is required to make sure that each student gets 10 hours of environmental education a year. So it's really, really refreshing for me to be able to see schools like Forest Edge, which I have toured, and it is amazing in terms of how they use their entire school as a teaching tool. And Manasha will certainly do the same thing. So the bike example that was just given is a great example. Kids have a really hard time wrapping their minds around concepts that they can't see or feel or touch. So the bike demonstration is actually one of a really cool set of tools that you can check out through the Focus Keep program, and that's housed at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, and it's called Pedal Power. So any school can actually check that out, and it comes with this big board, and there's maybe an incandescent light bulb and a compact fluorescent light bulb and an LED bulb and maybe a hairdryer and a radio, and kids get on the bike and they have to pedal the bike, and then you're able to like have this little switch, and you switch over from maybe using an LED bulb to a compact fluorescent bulb. Mm. And the kids can understand how much more energy it takes them to pedal the bike to make the compact bulb work versus the LED bulbs.
And all of these light bulbs really adding up in energy savings when you look at it more holistically. Teresa, we are hearing from Andy there about just the operating cost savings, you know, half of the cost of perhaps traditional buildings. In terms of the building costs, though, that are associated with this type of energy efficiency, can you give us any indications about whether it's more expensive or what building materials are associated to be more expensive or less expensive with electric schools?
There is a cost premium to, first of all, installing a geothermal bore field, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't have a big bore field like that when you have a gas system. So there's that cost. Then there is a slight premium with installing a geothermal heating and cooling system. But the good news is right now, due to the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, school districts, while they don't pay taxes because they are a tax-exempt entity, they can actually receive what's called a direct pay elective from the federal government, that once they place their schools into service, they get that rebate check in the form of like real cash check from the federal government, which helps offset that additional cost premium. And actually, it's less expensive right now utilizing the IRA funding to use a geothermal system than a traditional code compliant boiler and chiller system. And, you know, as mentioned, it is saving about 50% or more on your energy, on the annual energy utility bills. And so the Inflation Reduction Act right now, and I'll just use Menasha as the example, they have a 1.3 megawatt photovoltaic system, which offsets the 1.3 megawatts of energy that the school is going to consume in terms of heating, cooling, lighting, and plug loads. So combined, that's 2.6 megawatts of energy. And from the IRA, if you are, if your system is over 1 megawatt of energy, you're able to go from a 6% base tax credit, and then any systems tied into the geothermal systems, the other energy property that they would get a rebate on would be the photovoltaic system itself and the microgrid. And then when you put a photovoltaic system on top of a school, you have to essentially beef the structure of the school up to be able to hold any wind loads or snow loads associated with the photovoltaic panels, which is an additional 5 pounds per square foot. So you're able to secure that rebate on that differential between a normal structure and a beefed up structure to hold that additional 5 pounds per square foot. With a school that's over 1 megawatt, if you use prevailing wages and an apprenticeship, your base tax credit goes from 6% to 30%. And then if you use utilize the domestic content bonus, which is an additional 10%, if all of your iron and steel components are manufactured in the United States, and then 40% of the rest of that energy property is manufactured in the United States, you're now looking at getting a 40% rebate on that entire, on all of those energy properties I just mentioned.
And I want to jump in here and just field this last question to Andy. Has the Oregon district applied for these federal tax credits? What is the impact?
It's huge. We unfortunately built Forest Edge from a 2018 referendum, so that predated the Inflation Reduction Act. But we have taken advantage of an additional solar array that we put on our pool here in Oregon. And we actually just submitted last month to the federal government with our first tax return to get that 30% money back for our solar panels. So definitely huge incentives for schools, nonprofits, churches, municipalities to take advantage of this Inflation Reduction Act that's out there. It's not the things that you were talking about with Menasha are a little bit more complicated when you get into geothermal and those types of things. But for solar, it was actually fairly easy for us. So definitely encourage people to look into that.
Andy and Teresa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Andy Weiland is business manager of the Oregon School District, and Teresa Lehman there, director of sustainable services at Myron Construction in Neenah.